Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Aaron from New York.
My name is Aaron Swart, and I'm an alcoholic. And grateful to be here. I just want to thank Sarah for asking me to speak. I ran into some guys that Sarah knows, and I think my name got relayed to her. Hopefully they didn't misrepresent what I'm all about, or else we're all in some trouble. Get some house cleaning out of the way. So I have been sober since July 14th, 2003. I have a sponsor. I sponsor others. And I have a home group, which is the Atlanta group in New York City. Any of you are ever there, please feel free to join us. There are 7 meetings a week, all the time. They're excited. They love Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what I like being a part of. I just moved here. I was telling a bunch of people, I just moved to New York City from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and before that I lived in Fargo, North Dakota, so driving out here was rather refreshing because I feel like I haven't seen a pine tree for, literally the last 3 months, so it's like nice to get out of the concrete jungle gym, get away from the hustle and bustle, and come out and feel like I see some people that feels like home. You know, I also think it's pretty cool that you guys meet outside because I was talking to some people before the meeting, and sometimes in a church basement can get pretty depressing, right? Like, we're down there, it's dirty, it's barely lit, and sometimes you can run into the wrong meeting, especially in New York City, and you're like, what am I doing here? I don't know what this is about, because sobriety to me is more than going to meetings and not drinking. You know, it's like, I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy that can stay around for that. I'm not the guy that grew up with that. I'm a guy that has a propensity to be extremely uncomfortable, regardless of where I am, if I'm not doing any spiritual work. And so I'm lucky that I found the Alcoholics Anonymous that speaks to me and saved my life. You know, I've been going to a lot of meetings and I've been hearing a lot about, you know, the psychic change that comes about. And I was thinking about that, and it's like really one of the biggest things for me is that I love Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the capstone of the psychic change that has taken place in my life. I love everything it stands for. I love everything about it. And that was not the way that I was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You people took me in at my worst and brought me to a place where I never thought I could, never even thought was possible, right? Only in the dreams and only, you know, only in my dreams did I ever think that I would live a life that I'm living today. So I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. There's another little way in the big book that it talks about we tell our stories. It talks about asking us to tell our stories and how we came into a relationship with a power greater than ourselves. And in reality, that is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Make no mistake, I did the steps. I've done the work to be here, but there has been something that has changed my life beyond any human aid. Right? It's changed me significantly. So we'll get into that. Hopefully we'll liven it up a little bit in here. It's a pretty serious room. So I figured, it's been nice. I first started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous when you could still smoke in the clubhouses. And so, like, I absolutely loved showing up. They were setting the ashtrays out, and I'm thinking to myself, this is exactly where I need to be. You know, it's like, smoke them if you got them. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, I really do. So, hasn't always been that way, right? I grew up a kind of a rambunctious kid, which, you know, doesn't really make me an alcoholic or anything like that. Alcoholism's kind of in the family, not really, but I have a tendency to see life a little bit differently than everybody else does, right? It's like I go into a toy store, left to my own devices, I want that toy, right? I go home, I'm playing with that toy like it's a truck. I specifically remember this. And I see, you know, in the toy store, I pick the one that I want. I go home, I'm sitting on the driveway, I'm playing with this thing. And all of a sudden, I look next door, and David has a different truck that I want. The truck that I have doesn't work for me anymore. I want the truck that David has, and I go inside, and I throw a fit until my mom's willing to do something about that, whether she says maybe next week we'll get it or we'll go and we'll get it right then and there. So from the get-go, I'm not content. You know, like I'm one of those people that I'm just different, right? I'm a different guy. You can see it standing up here. Like, I'm standing up here thinking about what everybody's thinking about me, whether I'm dressed right, whether my hair is done. It's like, do you like me? Do you hate me? Did I open too soft? I'm not too sure, right? Like, I'm just the guy that's like always thinking about what you're thinking and what I should say or where I should go or how I should act or what I should be, you know? That's how I was all the way from the start. And I never experienced that stopping until I had a drink of alcohol. When I started drinking alcohol, all of those things went to the side, right? It didn't matter that she didn't like me. It didn't matter where I was at. It didn't matter what I was wearing. It didn't matter that I felt like my life was going absolutely nowhere at the ripe old age of 11, right? All of a sudden, it just seemed like everything came into focus, and I remember looking up at the stars and thinking to myself, I'm going to do this as much as I can, as often as I can. I had an abnormal reaction to alcohol. It did something for me. It didn't do something to me. It did something for me, right? The other guys that I were with that started drinking, they took a sip of the beer that they had, and they spit it out, and I was like, don't waste it. I had no idea what alcohol would do to you whatsoever before that moment. But once it hit my lips, I knew that there was something special in that. And because it warmed me up. You know that feeling where it just kind of like goes all the way down, warms your belly up, and everything's like, it just makes it feel like you just got a big hug from the inside out. It's like, I love that. Wanted that all of the time. So I chased it. I chased it for a long time. I had no idea what it meant to be alcoholic. I had a different perspective on things, right? It's like I just like to party a little bit harder than everybody else. Nobody else could really handle it whatsoever. So it's like as soon as everybody else starts slowing down, I start speeding up. You know, when I get drunk, I like to go and puke so I can come back out and drink some more. You know, it's like when there's a case of beer left in the refrigerator, I'm the guy that wants to go out and get another couple cases because we might run out before the night's over. You know, I'm the guy that's always thinking about what we're going to be doing next or who I'm going to hang out next because these people are petering out. You know, and I chased it hard and long. I mean, I traded a lot of things to start drinking, and I'm not here to bore you with the particulars on the things that I gave up in my life because everybody has those. There are two things in this world that make me alcoholic. Once I start drinking, I cannot stop drinking. And once I start drinking, I can't tell you how many I'm going to take, right? I can't stop. And once I quit forever, I can't stay stopped. Because I did that for a long period of time. The last 6 months of my drinking were pretty disgusting, right? Like every day I would wake up in the morning and I would tell myself, I'm not going to drink today. I'm going to go out and I'm going to get a job. I'm going to do all these things. And I was sneaking into this basement of these friends of mine and sleeping on a concrete floor where there was a bathroom that hadn't been cleaned in probably 10 years. It was disgusting. In the bathroom, there was a light that dangled that flickered on and off, and there was a mirror that was kind of, you know, it was old, so it was dingy. You couldn't really see what was coming back to you. There was a sink that kind of, it was an old sink, went down to the floor. It was kind of rickety, and I'd try to rip that out of the ground every single day. I'd put my hands on the side of that sink. I'd look at that mirror, and I'd tell myself, you're going to do something different with your life today. You absolutely are going to do something different with your life. And I meant every single thing about it. If you would have asked me what I wanted to do, I wanted to go back, I wanted to have dinner with my mom, I wanted to get a job, I wanted to find a place to live, I wanted to be a good citizen, right? My problem is that about 2 o'clock comes around, I haven't accomplished any of it, and the thought that gets me every single time is like, why don't I just start that stuff tomorrow? You know, you worked hard today, you made your bed, I start telling myself all these different things inside of me that say, you know what, you can start that tomorrow. Go hang out with the guys tonight, right, and you can start all this tomorrow. And see, I do that for about 8 months. And I'm going to tell you, what happened towards the end of my drinking was I couldn't even, if I told you something, I didn't even know if I was telling you the truth, right? Now, it's different when I stopped lying about my drinking and lying what I wanted to do to everybody else so that I could keep drinking. You know, it was like I was telling my mom or I was telling the police or I was telling all these other people that I wasn't going to do certain things. But there was something that changed over that course of those 8 months when I would tell myself, I'm not going to drink today, and end up drunk that night. Every moral fiber of my being was ripped out of who I was. I would look in that mirror every single day, and I'd say to myself, who am I? And I couldn't answer it. I mean, it was a pretty scary proposition, right? The kid that grew up wanting to be a sports player, wanting to be a doctor, all those dreams that I had were gone because at the end of the day, I knew whatever came out of my mouth was a lie. That's pretty scary, right? So I got in some trouble. I had the Mexican mafia after me. I had a court case following me all around. I was running from the law. I had no place to live. The guys that I were living with, I just got them evicted because a guy got his jaw busted in 3 spots out on the front lawn. You know, and so I had no place to go. So I'm like a lot of people, I hope, anyway. I'm a tough guy, so tough guys call their mom. You know, it's like, hey, mom, I'm in some really big trouble here. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this thing one really good shot. You know, I'm going to get sober, and I don't need to get any help. I don't need Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even know what Alcoholics Anonymous was, but somebody said something to me about it, and I'm like, absolutely not. That is not the place for me to go. And so I ended up, they still wouldn't let me go home because I had 2 younger brothers and, you know, I'm just a shining example of what not to be. I mean, I was everything that could have been. You know that feeling where it's like I could have done this or I could have done that or if I would have just done this, I would have done that. That was me. I mean, everything in my life, I had taken the wrong turn. I was the epitome of a loser in society, right? Like, I'm not trying to sugarcoat this whatsoever. It's like I didn't shower regularly. I looked very strange. I talked really fast and not complete sentences. I would drink for days. I mean, I wasn't a good guy. So they arranged for me to go and stay at a couple of places at a friend of the family's. And I got there and see, I thought drinking was my problem, and if I just stopped drinking, I'd be just fine. And so this is when I tried to stop drinking and couldn't. And this is when I started to try to control the amount that I took and found out that I couldn't. So what happened for me was I go there, I sleep off one heck of a drunk. I wake up the next morning, it's like, okay, I'm going to stay sober. This is what sobriety is going to look like. It's going to be fine. You know, it's like, I'm not going to drink. I'm smoking 2.5-3 packs of cigarettes a day. I'm pacing outside this guy's house. He thinks he literally has like a lunatic staying with him. You know, it's like my head is just spinning constantly with thoughts like this. What's he thinking about me? Do I have the right clothes to be out here? Can I do this? Smoking cigarettes back and forth. I don't know what I'm going to do. If I never drink again, I mean, seriously, I'm never going to get a girl. I'm never going to have any friends. I'm never going to even be able to get a job. Because at the end of a job interview, you go out for a drink and they say, congratulations, here's your job. It's a celebratory drink. You're going to be a loser. You're not going to be able to make any money. Why do you even try to do this? That guy, he's looking at you funny. Why is he looking at you funny? Just keep going. Leave me alone. Smoking cigarettes, crazy. And the other problem is, so then I think to myself, I'm just going to go to bed. It'll shut the mind off. It'll shut it off. And it's like as soon as I lay my head down, it's like the volume gets turned up. You know what I mean? It's like I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, man, if I would have just gone left, or if I wouldn't have hung out with him, or if I would have just done this, or if I would have just done that, it's like you're a loser. It doesn't even matter. And I did 3 days of that. right? 3 days constantly thinking and picking up speed with time. It's like they're not even complete sentences. I can't even really tell you what's going through my mind. I just know that the way that you're looking at me is making me feel really uncomfortable. And I have absolutely no idea what I'm supposed to do with my hands, how I'm supposed to sit, where am I supposed to be, what do normal people do? Like, get a job? I don't know. I mean, like, it's just, it's really uncomfortable, you know? And all of a sudden, the guys call. It's Friday. I'm 3 days sober. Guys call, say, hey, we're having a barbecue tonight. And that thought crossed my head, you know, it says, you know what, just go hang out with them, and here's the deal. All you got to do is have 132 of Heineken. Then nobody's going to ask you questions. Nobody's going to tell you where you need to go. Like, no, it's just, it's going to be fine. Maybe it'll quiet your head and you can get some sleep, because I hadn't slept in 3 days. I look like a mess. Literally look more strung out sober than I did when I was getting wasted. Like, it's a little weird, right? So I think to myself, it's like, okay, I'm going to have 132 of Heineken. I go into the liquor store. I buy myself a 32 of Heineken. I go out Friday night. I had a great time. I had 132 of Heineken. The noise quieted down. It was like I was there with my friends. Everything was fine. You know, Friday went so well that I thought to myself, why don't you do it again on Saturday? But instead of one, let's get two. So I had 232s of Heineken that night, you know, and everything went just fine. Saturday went so well, why don't you do it Sunday? Sunday, those 232s of Heineken were done in like 45 minutes, so I'm like scavenging the medicine cabinets just to find something to quiet it down because the voices started kicking in. You know, because towards the end of my drinking, didn't matter how much alcohol I consumed inside of my body, my head was still spinning out of control. I remember being physically completely wasted, laying on the couch without the ability to get up, and my head just spinning, like tormenting me, and it wouldn't quiet down. See, alcohol stopped working for me it literally did. It stopped working. It wouldn't take the edge off anymore. I get physically drunk, but I couldn't. You know that feeling where it's like you reach that certain point and you feel like you should run for the president of the United States the next day? You know, like, that's where I love to get to. Made life possible. Made me a dreamer, you know? Made all the bad stuff go away. Made me feel like it was going to all be good. You know, maybe I'd only get that for 10 minutes a night, but it was worth it, you know? And towards the end of my drinking, I didn't get that at all. I was drinking for a place that didn't exist. So Sunday, I find some opiates, I take the edge off, I go home, I get some sleep. And I don't know about you guys. Now, Monday, I mean business. I'm going to get a job, right? I've just had a successful weekend of controlling my drinking. And Monday, I'm going to get a job. And the context that I was living in is like, if I'm up and out of the house before noon, I mean business. You know, like, I mean, that's just the deal. It's like, I'm up and out of the house, I'm ready to go. Like, I mean business. Well, you know, I didn't know how to set an alarm. And I wake up at 11:30, but I am, like, bound and determined to get out of the house by noon. And I'm flying around the house. I'm putting on clothes. I, like, walk out. It's noon, and I'm, like, on the hunt for a job. I don't even know how to find a job. So I, like, walk to the nearest gas station. I put in an application. I sit, and I talk to the guy for, like, an hour. And he asked me. He goes, hey, there's this, like, long period of time that you're not in school. You don't have an address. Like, what's going on? And I kind of just, I wasn't prepared to answer questions like that, you know? And I'm like sitting there and I'm like going round and round in circle with this guy. And after about an hour, he's like, I like you. I know you from the past, but I'm just not going to be able to hire you. And I just think to myself, you know what? I'm not going to be able to find a job. This just doesn't even matter. Why am I even trying? This doesn't, you know, it's like, you're going to be a loser. You've always been a loser. You should just accept it. It's over. And then all of a sudden, the guys call. Hey, why don't you come down the river with us? And the thought crosses my head, I can start this stuff tomorrow. 18-pack of Coors Light and a gram of cocaine up my nose, I come to in the middle of a living room covered in blood with absolutely no recollection on how I got there. Like, that's not like waking up, going to the bathroom in somebody's closet, right? You know, like, you're sitting there and, like, people are screaming at you for, bloody murder, right? Like, I mean, they are mad Everybody is mad. People are coming at me with hockey sticks and baseball bats. And I'm like, what just happened here? I got blood on me. I hope it's not mine. You know? And I come to in the first lucid moment that I have, the first time in a long time that I think I honestly said the truth. I threw my hands up. I said, I have no idea how I got here. And I have no idea what I'm going to do. I think I freaked everybody out that everybody kind of just left me alone because they thought I like literally had like a psychotic break, right? I threw my hands up. I mean, I am literally covered from head to toe in blood. And that was it. That was my invitation to something greater than myself to come into my life. You know? And then after that, it's like, I'm on a train, I show up at my dad's house, now I'm covered in blood. Let me tell you, that was an interesting train ride because it was about a 4.5-hour train ride and like mom's like shuttling the kids away from me and like everybody's like, and it's like, I know you're looking at me funny now. I don't have to think it. I know you are. Like I'm in a different space right now. You know, like it doesn't matter. I just went on like autopilot. To this day, I can't explain to you why I got on that train and why I showed up to my father's house, who I hadn't spoken to in about a year, and asked him if I could get some help. Right? I had no recollection of like why that all happened, but I'm sure grateful that it did, right? I mean, it's actually pretty crazy to see what happened after that course in time just by a guy like me raising his hand up without a better answer at that point in time. I'm always the guy with the answer. I'm always the guy with the plan. I'm always the guy that can figure out how to get out of a situation that's just a little bit jammed up. You know? I'm excellent. I was a professional at it. I mean, that was my job, right? Like, it's like So, I show up and you know, through some facilities and whatnot, I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started to learn what Alcoholics Anonymous was and what was really wrong with me. Because, see, for the longest time, I thought that drinking was really my problem. So if I just stopped drinking, then my life should be good. And the problem is, when you get me away from alcohol, I get really aggravated. You know? Don't look at me that way. You know, like, you're not doing it right. I don't want you around me. Leave me alone. If you're not going to listen, just don't talk. You know, it's like, I mean, that's just how I was. I was not a nice guy. You know? And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was people around me that loved me enough to let me do what it is that I had to do. I mean, I was the guy that would sit in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was like, I sobered up in a place where there was a lot of Vietnam vets. And, like, you know, bless them for their service and even more for their service for, like, tolerating me. Because some guy would, like, say something in a meeting and afterwards I'd have the answer for him. You know, like, hey, this is what you got to do. Hadn't worked a step, no sponsor whatsoever, read a little bit of the literature, and then all of a sudden I'm like, this is what you got to do. You know, meanwhile, my life's falling apart. I got nothing going on. I still got the Mexican mafia after me looking to kill me, threatening to hurt my family and all the other people around. I got another court case coming down the pipe. You know, it's like nothing's really going well for this guy. You know, I mean, just not going well. And I find a guy, you know, and the other thing is, it's like people that I was around started getting sponsors. They started doing things in Alcoholics Anonymous. They started, you know, doing the steps, and all of a sudden their life started to get better. And the place that I was at, it was like everybody that graduated got a BMW. And I'm thinking, maybe if I do this stuff, I'll get a BMW, you know? But I found a guy that was talking. I'm not going to lie to you. I picked him because he looked like Where's Waldo. And I honestly thought he wouldn't push me around or tell me what I had to do. And there's that line in the book that gets me still to this day, right? If he's properly armed about the facts about himself, you can win the entire confidence of a man in just a few hours. That guy had me in about 15 minutes, right? I sat up here, talked about what my head was doing. I could not do that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a lunatic. Like, I mean, literally a lunatic. I couldn't stay in one spot for like 5 minutes. I was all over the place, right? And this guy sat me down. He held my attention for a good half hour. Hey, man, you ever know what it's like to be sitting there thinking about what the guy across the room from you is whispering in the other guy's ear, convinced that it's about you, knowing that they don't want you here, knowing that you don't want to be here, you know, and those guys, they're wondering why you're wearing what you're wearing, and the girls are laughing at you, and you're just sitting there, and you're thinking if you just went left instead of right, you would have just been fine, thinking about thinking all of the time, and it's like when you go to bed, the volume turns up. He said that to me in the first time that I ever met him, and my head the whole time was just shaking. He put words to what was going on inside of me better than I could have done myself. He won me over. And see, here was my mistake. So if you're new and you want to keep drinking, I don't suggest that you do this. I asked the man what I have to do, right? Because there was something different about him. He had a wedding ring on, drove a nice car. He came from work, right? Showed up at the meeting voluntarily, didn't have to be escorted there, right? I mean, that's a pretty big change for a guy like me. I was really baffled. If you know what's going on with me, how is it that your life is so different? Because let's be honest, if you had to live with this squirrel cage, you'd do anything to get out of there too. You know, like you'd run. I would have run a marathon if you would have said it would have quieted my head down. I didn't care. And I was real fortunate. He didn't miss a beat. He said, I went through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got involved in Service Unity. And I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. And that means that my head hasn't gotten the best of me in a long time. And that meant a lot to me, you know. And I held on to him like, I mean, that just that half hour with that guy. And you know what he did? It's funny. Not only did he look like Where's Waldo, but he asked me how I was doing. And I don't know about you guys, but when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lot of people talking at me. I had a lot of people talking for me. I had a lot of people talking about me. You know, it was like the Aaron show all of the time. And this guy, for the first time in a long time, felt like he was actually talking to me. He waited for a response. He would ask a question. He cared about what I said, or at least I thought he cared about what I said. After a while, after you ask them to be your sponsor, they don't care much what you think about anything, which is good for me because, you know, a lot of people come into Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, it's like, what do I got to do? And it's like, whatever's necessary. Right? Whatever is necessary. Everybody's path to spiritual enlightenment has different costs. And, you know, mine has been a lot of self-sacrifice and a lot of searching through the steps. I mean, it really has. It has not been a rainbows and puppy dogs. It hasn't. You know, that guy, he won me over. I learned what about Alcoholics Anonymous. I started going through the steps about 6 months sober. I got a phone call that my brother died in a car accident, right? The brother that never did anything wrong, and then here I am, the guy that's got a felony court charge pending, and the guy that's, like, just ripped his family apart, like, limb to limb. And, you know, so, like, I find out that he dies while the Mexican Mafia is looking for me, and, you know, I have to go back to the town that I was from and sit down and, you know, do all that. The day after we buried my brother, I'm indicted on another felony charge. You know, 3 weeks after that, I go to jail for 60 days for the first charge. Right? It's like, I thought if I just did this, I'd get a BMW. I mean, honestly, I'm not kidding you. Everywhere I went, I mean, everybody that graduated from the place that I was at and started doing Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like they got a BMW. And here I am, I'm going to jail in the middle of Nebraska. It's like, hey, did you forget about me, dude? You know, like. But I learned an extremely important lesson that, you know, we talk a lot about spirituality and we talk about the practical application of these steps. And not until you go through something will you realize that this thing works regardless of whether you're flying high or you're so low you don't know what you're going to do. Right? Alcoholics Anonymous works regardless of the circumstance or the condition. The only requirement necessary is that I do it to the best of my ability. Not the best of my ability that it used to be. The best of my ability to where it's like I'm going to do everything that I absolutely can to fulfill what my sponsor asked me to do, to say the prayers that I'm asked to say, to do the things that are required for sobriety. Right? Because there are requirements. Like, they're just can't just float in. You know, it's like, I love the book because there's a couple lines in there. And, you know, everybody has a different experience. I don't speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. This has only been my experience. There's a couple lines in the book, though, that I absolutely love. Simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. Right? And the other one is, we seek after this like the desperation of a drowning man. You know, like, those were the questions that I was always confronted with when I would call and say, well, yeah, but I want to go out with this girl. It's like, well, how's your four-step? And I'd say, it's not done yet. He's like, well, I wonder if the desperation of the drowning man would go out for on a date and maybe write tomorrow. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff that I was forced, that was brought to my attention immediately in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know? Easier, softer, I had none of that. The guy I would call with all these big problems, right, because I had fairly big problems, and I'd sit there and I'd rant for like 20 minutes, and I'd sit there and I'd say, dude, I'm like, this is going on, and this is going on, and this is going on, I don't know what I'm going to do, blah, 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 and I am so glad that he did not try to solve my worldly problems. What he did for me was he said, Aaron, there's a solution in this book that will solve your problem. And he used to aggravate me immensely. Because I'd be like, I got problems, dude. Like, this is not going to be solved by some steps. I got state of Nebraska is going to lock me up for 3 to 5 years. You know, it's like, I got all these different things. I just got indicted on another felony charge. I got my mom crying every 5 minutes. And you're telling me to go write inventory? You got to be crazy, man. He never wavered, though. Never. It never changed. The message never changed. So I did what he asked me to do. And I started stacking some time together and started doing some things and started being able to help some people. And I've had some really cool experiences along the way, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's like the coolest thing ever. This thing has never gotten boring for me. People are fascinating. I mean, they really are. You think you're amusing. Like, once you're at a point where you can actually talk and listen to somebody else, like, listen to what they're going through, it's like all of a sudden it's like, maybe I don't have it so bad. You know, like, how can I help this guy? That's where things started to change for me in my life, right? And the prayers started to mean something, right? It's like easy to thank God when things are going well, but is it easy to have the gratitude and the love in your heart for a power greater than yourself when your world just fell down all around you and that's where you go? And I wouldn't have gone there if I wasn't directed, because let me tell you, that was not the way that I used to do things. I used to do things in a manner that whatever felt right was what I was going to do. And all of a sudden, it was like calling that guy before I took action was the thing that I would do, you know? So, I mean, I got through that time, that period in my sobriety. And, you know, like, since I've been sober, now I'm a guy, I've been through the steps 13 times, sober 10 years, perpetually uncomfortable, right? Like, that is the way that... My sponsor calls it the divine curse. I mean, he just does. Sometimes he laughs at me. But I'm a guy that will constantly have to be seeking at a level in which to try to grow spiritually in a way that was different than yesterday. If I'm a guy that thinks what I did yesterday is going to keep me sober today, that's when I get into a lot of trouble, right? That's how I can tell how far away I am. Doesn't matter really at the end of the day how much I pray, how much I do service, how many people I hang out with. The noise inside of my head and the relationships that I have around me are pretty good indicators of my spiritual connection at that time. And the only way that I've found to strengthen that spiritual connection is through the steps. Other people find different methods, right? They do. I've been unsuccessful. My method works every single time the same way it did the first time, is the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? It's what works for a guy like me. I don't know what it is. I'm the guy that, I think a couple of you have probably heard my sponsor. I'm a guy that I take a meeting into Rikers Island. I love detoxes. I love looking at alcoholism square in the face and being able to tell those guys that there's a way out if they want it, right? Because I believe that. There's a power greater than all of us here that keeps us sober, right? At least in my experience. This thing was so big that it, like, does the undoable. It changed my heart, which is probably the biggest thing. I think so many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, we wait for this big spiritual upheaval that's going to happen as a result of working the steps and coming into this place of spiritual enlightenment. And I searched for that for a long time. I went to a lot of conferences. I did a lot of things searching for that one, just that one thing. If that guy says it this way, I'm going to get it. I'm going to hold on to it. It's like, you know, it's like if you don't take the first drink, you're not going to get drunk. Or, if you know, it's like, whatever, just the little one, like, sayings that people say. And what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, I get 10 seconds before I react to some dude cussing me out. You know, I don't reach across the table and snatch his neck and ask him who he thinks he's talking to. You know what I mean? Like, that for me is pretty cool. Or waking up in the morning thinking about what I can do for others versus about what's going to happen to me today. You know, like, thinking about giving is my first inclination in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, not taking, right? Those are big things that have changed for me. And sometimes they get overlooked, right? The fact that the drink is not squarely sitting on my face without an opportunity to get away from it is a miracle, right? We say it, oh, the obsession's been lifted. Oh, the obsession's been lifted. Let me tell you, like, not everybody gets that. You know, I stare at that square in the face all the time. I see guys that have come into Alcoholics Anonymous. They've done what has been asked of them, and they still end up in Rikers Island, and they still end up in detoxes. Now, I don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but to the plain eye, it looks like he's going to meetings, he's doing steps, and he's talking to a sponsor. I don't know if there's a spiritual connection there whatsoever, right? I just don't. But to not be grateful for the small things that we get every single day is, for me, as of late, that's been my psychic change. I live a life completely different. I want to talk about a couple of stories. I was talking before the meeting. It's working with others has been like a real bright spot in my life. You know, my sponsor solution for me is like, you know, if I'm doing steps, great. But my sponsor solution for me, like, I struggle. Like, I have the divine curse, right? Financially, women, I mean, you name it, I got it. Like, I show up consistently to Alcoholics Anonymous. I do everything that I'm asked to do, and I still manage to get myself in a lot of trouble. I mean, I do. I have a good thought every once in a while. I go out and I execute, and all of a sudden it's pain. Like, I don't get it. Where's this divine intervention that's been coming for me? But anyway, hopefully one day I'll get sick of the pain. I'll tell you the difference, though, is that, like, the pain doesn't last as long and it isn't nearly as great. Like, it's just, it goes away faster because I know where I need to go, and it doesn't get so out of control that I need, like, a whole spiritual makeover when I come back. You know, it's like the direction I get is, like, go find people to work with. Call me when you get them. Because that's the thing that saves my life. It really is. So anyway, I'll talk about a couple of experiences that I had. I've had a very unique spiritual journey with finding a power greater than myself through the steps. I mean, I really have. I've watched a lot of people that I got sober with. It's like, you know, they found God. They went to church. They realized that Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't for them. And then they ended up drinking. Not saying that's everywhere that happens. I know a lot of people do it both ways. I can't do it. That's been my experience with it. I had a guy once. After my brother died, I did a fist step, and I got done reading, and he goes, "Aren't you mad at God for taking your brother?" And I said, "Not really. I had gotten to a place where it's like I kind of believe that everything happens for a reason, right? Like I really believe that inside of my heart that like whatever happens is not happening by mistake. It's happening for a reason." And I told him that, and he said, "That's not God." And he gave me his perception of God, and I'll tell you what I learned at that moment in time was, don't ever tell anybody what their conception of God should be. And that has been a guiding force for me. I'm here to help facilitate / grow that through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But what is going on between that man and God is that man's business. Because I shut down immediately and went through 4 years of some really hard work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it wasn't until I found a man that said this to me. He said, "You got to have the courage to have your own experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. You really do. The courage to have your own experience. You come in, you see these people. You know, I grew up with them. I'm sponsored by one. Spiritual giants. They talk everywhere. They do everything. These guys, they get it. They get it all, right? And it's like, sometimes I want to be the guy that's chasing those guys so much that I forget that it's about my experience. It's about what I'm doing between me and God to facilitate the growth and the relationship that is required of me to have a happy, sane, and sober life." You know? And that's what's been really cool for me, because as of late, I don't know, I've just come out of kind of a place where it's like I thought that seeking for God was going to be out here, and I started learning that through the steps that it's really about what's in here. And that's been my experience with that. The other thing is, I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous with some amends that I thought I was never going to be able to make, right? I mean, everybody's got them. There's absolutely no way that this is ever going to happen because it's too tall or there's too many obstacles or whatever. And about 5 years sober, and that kid that got his jaw busted in 3 spots, I was charged for that. That was actually the second felony charge that I caught. And I was ordered, honestly, never to speak to that man again, indefinitely. Typically, it's for, like, the probationary period that you're on, but this was, like, ever again. The family had asked for special circumstances that I'd never speak to that man again. And one day I got a 12-step call, and I go, and some guy couldn't make it, so he called me, and he asked me if I would go, and I said, absolutely. I mean, that's like gold, right? Like, somebody says, "Hey, go talk to a guy." It's like, absolutely, I'm there. Not because, like, I just love it. Like, that's where it is for me. My job doesn't fulfill me. You know, it's like, I get fed from helping other people. Right? Like, that's just my thing. Like, I love it. I love staring alcoholism square in the face and saying, "You don't have to do this anymore, man. You don't have to do this anymore. You can live a different way of life." And anyway, so I go and I sit down and I talk to this guy, and, you know, we started talking, and he was in pretty rough shape. And, you know, in Fargo, North Dakota, you got a lot more space than you do in New York City. So you ask guys if they want to come stay at your house, because I had an extra room. I'd let a new guy come and stay, get on his feet, and then we'd move him out once he got a job and did all the things that he needed to do. And I asked this guy if he wanted to. He said, "Yeah, absolutely. You just got to come over. We're going to have dinner, meet my folks, and go down, sit down, have dinner with everybody. Everybody's good. Everybody's happy." They say, "Yeah, parents are thanking me profusely, right? Thank you for helping him. Thank you for doing this. Just really appreciate it." Walk out, I heard the kid's last name. I said, "Hey, you related to this kid?" He goes, "Yeah, that's my brother." The kid's jaw that was busted in 3 places that was on the front lawn, his brother's coming to stay with me 5 years later. Right? Still sober. And we're trying to, his brother doesn't really want to talk to me, but we're trying to make that happen. I've still been trying to make that happen, but, you know, that's pretty cool for a guy like me. It's like things that I thought I would never get to do, right? You know? I'm a two-time felon. And I've done a lot of things that people shouldn't do in their lives, right? Like with a lot of people here. I'm not saying that I'm unique. But one thing that I learned when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous is we learn to live by a different set of principles, right? We tell on ourselves when we do something wrong. Like, it's a little different when it starts, right? Like walking into your boss and saying, hey, you know, I stole $5. Here it is. You know, like, I mean, it's a little awkward because you're just waiting for to get fired. But I'd done that for a long enough period of time, and I live by a certain set of principles, which then bind me to the spiritual world. I really believe that. Even though it feels like I'm going backwards. If you took a look at it and you said the two universes, the material world and the spiritual world, run parallel, right? My head tells me that I got to do more, I got to lie, cheat, and steal to get ahead in the material world. I mean, it really does. In New York City, it's like that, right? Like, it's like, watch out, because I'll cut you. You know, it's like, I mean, it's really like that. And I will tell you this. I've not wavered from my spiritual set of principles in a long time. I mean, really wavered, right? Like, whenever I do something wrong, I'm pretty quick to come back and make right, because I just can't live with it anymore. Like, it's not fun not sleeping at night sober. And I just like to say that I've found that if I live by those spiritual principles, I am not bound by the material world. Different things start to happen to me in my life. Like I said, I'm a two-time felon, right? Like, renting an apartment for a guy like me is miserable. But I have not been homeless one day sober, right? Being a two-time felon, finding a job is extremely challenging. But I work for a Fortune 50 company, right? And I'm not saying these things because they're so cool and like, look at me, I do all this stuff. But in reality, it's like, that's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the power of on a whatever night, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, I go and I show up because I told somebody that I would be there and I try to be of service, right? That's the power of having a servant's heart, of trying to change the way that I live my life and seeing what I can bring to the situation rather than take from the situation. You know, like, that's what's happened to me in my life. I really used to struggle with Alcoholics Anonymous because it's like, oh, yeah, that guy just read a book and he's reciting it and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, in reality, it's like, this is my truth. Practical application of that book changes lives. I've watched it hundreds of times. Right? I love it. Like, it's really what I get up for in the morning. I mean, it's crazy, right? Like, all the important things, all these crazy things, and the progress that happens here doesn't happen anywhere. There are, like, so many miracles. That's what's so cool to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I love it, right? Like, everybody's got their own little story that says, like, hey, look at what happened here. I started doing these things, and then all of a sudden it's like this thing that I never thought was going to work out worked out. And it's like, you know, we take that stuff for granted because we listen to it every single week. You know, but listening to a sponsor and taking direction in my life has been the best thing that has ever happened to me. I help guys now. I give them direction on their life. I still can't do it for myself. I don't know what the deal is. It's like my perception is like really skewed when it comes to my life. I have no idea. It's like I think I'm in good spiritual, like, sometimes I'll, like, the book tells us to test the God consciousness within. So, like, sometimes there will be, like, a real aggravating situation that will come up at work. And I'll, like, go and I'll get quiet and I'll pray. And I'll be like, I'm going to test this. I'm not going to call my sponsor. I'll go out. I'll do whatever it is that I think is a great idea. And stuff just blows up. Like, I don't know what the deal is. I call my sponsor. He tells me to do something a little bit different. It's like, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And I do that. And then all of a sudden, things work out. I have no idea. I have no idea why it still does that. It still does that. I mean, it's still like that. It blows my mind. I'm re-falling in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. You move, you know, you move, you find out like what it is that you did every week for to be that you were kind of took for granted. You know, it's like every Monday night I went to a federal halfway house. Tuesday night was my home group. Wednesday night I went to a detox. You know, Friday I went to a jail. Saturday I went to a Salvation Army. You know, you take those things for granted. You see the guys you work with all the time. You do all those things. You come into Alcoholics Anonymous that you don't know. They're doing the same things, and you're just so grateful when somebody asks you to come along. You know? Like, it's really cool getting to meet people, pulling my head out of the sand, and, you know, remembering what it's like to be brand new again. Because I'm telling you what, Alcoholics Anonymous, there are people with huge hearts here, right? The most selfish, self-centered people that just want to see you get better. It's like a paradox, and it's crazy. But it's the coolest thing in the world to be a part of, you know? I go till what, 9:40? No, I'm just kidding.
Seat's too hard.
There you go. Seat's too hard? I'll get you a cushion. I'm just kidding. The other thing is, so I've struggled a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just want to close with this. I've struggled a lot with Alcoholics Anonymous because there are people that just do it a little bit differently. There are people that just don't do it the way that I've been taught to do it. And that's okay, because we're all trying to do it. We're all trying to do it. I follow the certain way that I've been taught to do it. You talk to me. I'm so passionate about it. But I cannot be intolerant of anybody else's method. You know? I cannot. I don't endorse it. Right? But I have to be tolerant, because I cannot judge myself out of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a line in the book that talks about, to the exact extent that he's lost the power to choice and drink will be how much he will need to grow spiritually, right? So if you think about that for a second and you plot those, it's an inverse curve, right? The power to choose whether you're going to drink to a point where you have no choice whatsoever. You're way down here. And you mirror that curve over here. And this is the spiritual life that you're going to have to live. You look over here, I'm a guy that lost every ounce that I ever had to choose whether or not I was going to drink. This is where I have to live, and God is in between there. I got to have a big God to stay here. I'm grateful to be here, gratefully sober, and thanks for asking me to come.